Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in today for Steve Bertrand, who is off on gallivanting across Europe, I think. It's Money Smart Week. It's one of my favorite weeks of the year. Money Smart Week is a time that you can learn all about money for free in hundreds of sessions all over the metro area. And we're going to have somebody from the Fed a little bit later on in the show to tell you where you can find out more about that. And of course, you can find out from my website as well, thinklink.com and at Glink if you want to follow our Twitter feed. So we're going to kick things off today, as we usually do, with the folks from Chicago Inno. Let me get you guys on here. Jim Dalkey and Will Flanagan are with Chicago Inno. And as always, they come in and they have loads of things to tell us about what's going on in the Chicago startup world. So let's start with Walgreens, because the former CEO of Walgreens, I saw reported this week, has left his job at Walgreens and is now doing, is it fintech startups or is it health tech?
So it's sort of interesting, right? So Gregory Wasson left Walgreens back in 2014, and now has sort of come to light what he's doing now. And basically what he's doing is sort of helping large Fortune 50 companies sort of spin off new companies, new technology companies. So it's not necessarily fintech specific or health specific. It's really just sort of helping these like massive brands kind of create technology in-house, spin that off, and create new startups of their own. So one company that they're already working with is Procter & Gamble, already helped build a new technology called PureCycle, which basically allows a plastic material to be recycled a little more efficiently. So basically what they're trying to do is take this model to other massive corporations and help them kind of innovate in-house.
So commercialization of technology, which has become like a thing, right? This is something that I think I remember. Actually, I've met the guy who at MIT, like a really long time ago in the 70s, started one of the very first tech transfer programs, where they started this kind of thing and they took technology from universities that were creating a lot of it for research, and they were trying to help fund companies and do commercial applications. Now that's spread out all over, but it's funny, the big companies really don't do this very efficiently.
No, not at all. These companies are spending millions and millions and millions of dollars in their R&D, and a lot of time it just sits there. So what this venture is doing, it's basically kind of a one-stop shop for turning R&D into a business. And there's kind of a history for this happening here in Chicago. McDonald's actually had an in-house incubator that has created some really successful businesses. One of them was, they were trying to figure out, you know, how do you get people into McDonald's if they're not hungry? And one of their ideas was, could we create a kiosk that sells DVDs? And out of the McDonald's incubator came Redbox. And Redbox ended up being one of the faster growing kind of tech digital businesses in Illinois. And that's kind of what Inventure is trying to do, is basically you have all of these ideas, you're spending a ton of money and resources on these brainstorms. Here is a plug-and-play way to turn these brainstorms into businesses.
Because we know the companies, especially really big companies, are not particularly efficient at doing this sort of thing. I mean, to start up, you've got to be nimble, you've got to understand how things move in pieces, and you have to be willing to fail, which I think a lot of big companies just aren't.
Yeah, 100%. And I think one of the things you hit on about just tech transfer, that's where with every city and region trying to compete against the coast, that's one of those things where I think Chicago can do a better job, is commercializing their technology that's been being created in their universities and their labs. You know, when you think about leaning into your unique advantages to kind of compete against these other cities, Illinois is the only state in the country with two U.S. Department of Energy labs. We have all these amazing universities, and I think Jim, I remember there is this report from the Illinois Science and Tech Coalition that said 800 startups have been created out of Illinois universities over the past 5 years, but only 16% of them are using lab generated technology to fuel their business. And of that small percent, those companies are responsible for 50% of the funding. So the companies that are using lab generated technology and doing this tech transfer are raising a ton of funding, but we're just not maximizing it well enough.
Well, we wish him all the luck. Obviously, Greg Wesson, will be interesting to see if a big company guy can make other big companies move faster, and hopefully that he can. Tell me a little bit about Rummy Spice. This is a local Chicago company. They're going to be on Shark Tank?
Yeah, this is just the latest Chicago startup to appear on Shark Tank. We've had just a string of a lot lately. It's been really interesting to kind of see the city's tech companies kind of appear on Shark Tank. But yeah, Roomie Spice, they're...
I could never be on Shark Tank. I mean, I know Barbara Corcoran. Yeah. I don't think I could ever stand there. I would crack up or something.
It's nerve-wracking, certainly. It's TV, too, right?
It's not real, right? Reality TV.
Television, and sometimes the pursuit of that objective... creates drama where maybe there shouldn't be drama, and yeah, I know I wouldn't respond well on that.
How Roomie Spice does. They're a very interesting startup, veteran-led company. They source saffron directly from Afghan farmers, and really a way to sort
which
of,
sounds really dangerous altogether,
you know,
but okay.
And it's, you know, they're employing more than 300 women in
that's
Afghanistan
amazing.
who harvest the saffron by hand, so it's right. A really big economic generator for the area, and they're going to be on Shark Tank on May 5th. So we don't have any details, insider information yet as to, you know, how they did, but you know, a big part of appearing on Shark Tank isn't so much if you get the investment, it's the exposure of being on
sure,
the show.
Sure, of course. And frankly, you just have to say that if there's going to be a spice that's harvested, saffron, which can retail for some ridiculous amount per ounce, even because it's just so delicate and it's so expensive, at least there's a chance for some profitability down the line, which is kind of nice.
Certainly.
It'd be great to rebuild that country
a
little bit.
Exactly.
Hey, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. It's Money Smart Week. We're going to have more about all the free things that you can do to learn about money, make yourself smarter this week, coming up a little bit later in the show. You can find out more about me at thinklink.com, and I hope you'll follow me at Glink. We are in conversations with Jim and Will right now of Chicago Inno, chicagoinno.com, talking about Mercado. Mercado, did I say that correctly?
Yeah, Mercado.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about what they are and why you think that they're going to make a difference when it comes to food.
Yeah, these guys are cool. So this is a New York company that just expanded to Chicago. So right now in grocery and food in general, food delivery, ingredient delivery is one of the hottest sectors in technology. You have obviously Peapod, the local company we talked about a couple years ago or a couple weeks ago. You have Amazon, which is a monster, which is trying to basically be the online grocery store, the online solution for everything. And what Mercado is doing is they're not another competitor. What they're doing is they provide kind of a marketplace and the software and the tools that allow neighborhood grocery stores, kind of your favorite local spots, to compete online. So here's how you can add your inventory online. Here's how you can price it online, how you can execute delivery. So if you have that neighborhood spot where, man, I'll get my diapers and my paper towels and all of this stuff on Amazon, but I get this sausage every day from this store, what Mercado's doing is it's allowing that store to finally compete online, which I think is really cool. And it's a trend we're seeing across technology. Instead of just trying to be another delivery service, you're giving this suite of offerings to these mom and pop shops to just compete a little bit.
So this is a platform shop, so they can sell it over and over again, right? You'd call it a platform?
It's exactly right. I mean, you know, you think about these neighborhood stores, it's very hard to kind of, you know, how do you resell? That is where you struggle to compete against Amazon, who they're, because everything's being bought online, they know when you're running out of paper towels. They know when you're running out of ingredients.
I know. It's like your drugstore.com where
that's
you're just
exactly,
you know,
right.
Getting so every month you get your drugs.
Yeah, so they can hit you right at the right time. And if, you know, they think, ooh, maybe he's buying paper towels somewhere else, there's a 10% coupon. By allowing these mom and pop
so
shops
smart.
And these neighborhood stores,
they can do the same thing.
Exactly, to compete online.
So my neighborhood store just went online, and we used to get little cards where if you bought 9 sandwiches, the 10th was free at the deli counter. And so I went in with my little, you know, my little card, and they're like, oh, we don't do those anymore.
Oh, no.
I said, really? He said, oh, no, now it's online. You just go to our app, you download our app, and we'll keep track for you automatically, and we're just going to give it to you free when we know that you're there. And I thought, first thought, one more app to download. And my second thing was, how cool that they are actually getting with the program. I don't know if they're using Mercado, but it's that sort of thing where even locals with just 2 stores or 1 store can compete.
Yeah, and I totally sympathize with, oh, another app.
You guys must have like a phone so heavy, stuffed with apps,
know.
Right?
It's yeah, I'm plugging through data pretty quickly, but like my vet just asked me to download their app, and I get stickers every time I have a dog checkup. And it's like, sounds kind of silly, but it's cool that being able to build a custom app is now kind of so democratized that you can allow these businesses to you know, yes, they're not going to compete with the big boys, but allows them to get online.
And a part of it, what's interesting about the grocery delivery, too, is that even though we feel like we're moving so quickly in technology, online delivery is only a sliver of the grocery market. So there's still a lot of room for players like Mercado and others to sort of take hold in this industry.
And you think that there are just a couple, and then you realize that there's just millions and millions. I want to just, to your point about apps and APIs, it is so easy to have one built. I think any 11-year-old now can do it. But for Best Money Moves, my company that is the HR app that we basically give to companies for their employees, we're like most apps today are very API oriented, right? So the technology that you build behind mm-hmm. allows you to sort of pull out that information. And so when you used to have the shopper cards, when you go to your grocery store, like to Jewel or whatever, and you know they were like, oh, do you have your special number? Because they were trying to scrape that information piece it together. It's now so easy with an API to just kind of grab all of that right from the front when you download that app.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly you can spin something up, right? Like, you know, we could you know, go on to Squarespace, create a website, go to CrowdTwist, crowdsource some logos. I could call it ChicagoTechMeetups.org, and then plug in Eventbrite's tech API, and next thing you know, I have an events site where I can take a piece off ticket sales, and we just did that right. In 20 minutes, right? It's just everything, and that's why I'm so bullish on not just Chicago, but all of these other emerging tech ecosystems that are happening in the middle of the country, because you used to have to go to the coast to build, and now you can build anywhere with all of these cloud-based applications and platforms. Technology is being democratized, and a good idea can happen anywhere, and now you can execute it anywhere.
So awesome. Jim and Will from Chicago Inno, chicagoinno.com. You've got more stuff up there. We're just running out of time. I'm so sorry, but come back and see us next week, okay?
We will.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Good to have you here. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. Money Smart Week, everybody. We'll talk about that and more. Kimball Musk, Elon's brother, coming up next, WGN Radio. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Elise Glink. It's Money Smart Week in Chicago nationwide. It started in 16 years ago. I'm not even going to try and do the math on that. We'll talk about Money Smart Week and where you can go to find hundreds of free sessions this week on money, all sorts of aspects of it, coming up next on WGN Radio. But right now, we have actually somebody very exciting to talk to. Kimball Musk is the co-founder of Kitchen Bistro Chicago. The overall company is called The Kitchen. It's a growing family of businesses that pursues an America where everyone has access to real food. And Kimball's been named the 2017 Social Entrepreneur by the World Economic Forum for his work to bring real food to everyone. And what his company does, what this nonprofit does, is build learning gardens in schools across the U.S. But he flows that from restaurants sourcing food locally and bringing that right to the table for kids and for others. Kimball, welcome to WGN Radio. Are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Terrific. I'm so glad to hear you. Sorry about that. Welcome to WGN Radio. So tell me a little bit about Kitchen Bistro Chicago, because this is sort of a local aspect.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So the Kitchen Bistro, we opened a couple years ago. We are a restaurant dedicated to supporting local farmers, in particular Nichols Farm. We love Andrew Lutze from Local Foods. Really, the idea is to create a reflection of what grows in the Chicago community, what kind of animals are raised, and we, you know, working closely with those farmers to make sure it's the best quality food that you can buy.
It gets pretty cold in the winter. I don't know. Are we going to get something, you know, when December rolls around and we don't get, you know, sort of like cold weather growing things? What are we going to be eating?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's part of the fun, to be honest. So, like, in the wintertime, it really becomes a meat and potatoes kind of experience. You'll do your cabbage salad or some root vegetables, fennel salad, things like that. But then when spring comes around, like right now, you're starting to get some amazing seasonal greens, some baby mustard green salad that you just can't get the rest of the year no matter where you want to buy it. And that's because you just follow the season. So it's really amazing.
So tell me a little bit about Chicago 200, because you're partnering with the City of Chicago, Chicago Public Schools, the Kitchen Community, which is the nonprofit part, and this month you're launching Chicago 200.
Yeah. So the Kitchen Community is a nonprofit that builds learning gardens, which are these beautiful outdoor classrooms, 2,000 square feet, where teachers learn how to teach science through the growing of food. They're unlike other traditional school gardens. These learning gardens are right on the playground. They're raised beds that are easy to teach in, really fun for kids to play in during recess. And there's no fences allowed around them, so parents can use them through the weekend. And so it becomes a community garden and a learning garden at the same time. And we've built 128 of those in partnership with the City of Chicago since 2013. And this month, we decided to do it FC last year, but this month was when we kicked off our campaign to go from 100 to 200.
Wow. That's amazing. And you've got almost 350 of these learning gardens across 6 major metro areas, L.A., Denver, Memphis, Pittsburgh, and Indianapolis, in addition to Chicago, right? I mean, how many kids are you reaching?
We are reaching almost 200,000 kids. It's really amazing.
Wow.
Honestly, every single school day, we reach 200,000 kids, focused mainly on teaching them science through the growing of food, but teachers love our learning gardens, and we'll teach them history, math, science, English, really whatever makes sense during the day. It's a beautiful day outside. The teachers want to be outside with the kids.
I always wanted to have class outside, for sure. I guess I'm not alone in that.
Kids love it.
How did you get so interested in gardening? Why? How has this become a passion for you?
Well, for me, it's really about connecting kids to food. And there are many ways to do that. Obviously, to our restaurants, we love to serve children as well there. But what's great about a school garden, in the case of schools, is when you're on the school ground, you reach every single child. You don't just reach the kids that have parents that really are engaged with food. You reach kids that love a Big Mac or they love a Twinkie, and you're gonna reach every single one of those. And that's why it's such a good use of funds compared to doing the exact same learning garden but putting it off the school ground. Yeah, so we really focus on the schoolyard. And frankly, the reason why it appeals to me is you reach every child. We had a student last year who was in our entrepreneurship program, where we teach high school kids how to grow vegetables and sell them to local restaurants in the Google cafeteria. Again, we use local foods there as our partner there as well. And last January, we had a student that joined, frankly, to just for the money. They make $400 or $500 for the season. And she went to her doctor in January and found out she was pre-diabetic. And she looked around her and all the people that were working with her with growing fruits and vegetables and decided to follow a diet that matched what she was actually growing with us. And by July, she lost 8 pounds. By October, she lost 20 pounds. And she went back to the doctor just before Thanksgiving, and she was no longer pre-diabetic.
That's amazing.
And it changed her entire life. It really, it's just, that's the reason I get so excited about the work we do.
Well, that's really great. And of course, it just kind of all circles back, because you hope that this farm-to-table idea, where the farm is actually at schools, that kids will learn about it and they will bring that eating right into their own school kitchens, really, kitchen cafeterias. Do the schools use any of the produce that's made, that's grown?
Absolutely. So the kids will grow it for the cafeteria workers. Based on their needs, the kids will also do a farmer's market out front of the school, which is always a lot of fun.
That's great.
And then the other thing is the kids just eat it. There's no fence around it. So the kids are encouraged to eat the food as they grow it. So we love any way the kids decide to use the vegetables.
Right. What happens in the summer when school's out? Who takes care of the gardens then?
Yeah, so the parents get really engaged. Summers aren't as long as they used to be. So it's only about 6 weeks where we need some engagement with parents, but it's a phenomenal time for parents to be involved. Oftentimes church groups will get involved. and the kids will stay active throughout the summer.
Where do people find out more? I know that you've got a website, tkc.org. Is there anywhere else?
Exactly. Tkc.org is the best place to learn about the Learning Gardens in Chicago. For the restaurants, they can go to thekitchen.com.
That sounds great. Kimball Musk, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Find out more at tkc.org. Coming up next, we have Heather Greenwell. She is with Money Smart Week, and she's going to talk all about where you can find some free information on learning how to be smart about money and all the different sessions that are going on this week. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. Be back with another few minutes of the Wintrust Business Lunch next on WGN Radio. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. I will be here tomorrow as well. We've been promising you some more information about Money Smart Week, and here it is. We have Heather Greenwell with us. She's from the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. She is the Money Smart Week coordinator. Heather, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Here, put the microphone right in front of you. I know it's huge and it looks intimidating, but just lean right up close.
Okay.
So, Money Smart Week kicked off this morning at the Fed. What happened?
So we have Money Smart Week going from April 22nd to the 29th. And so we've actually had kickoffs happening around the 7th District. So I was in Detroit last weekend for the kickoff there. And then we've had a couple of different events happening around the Chicagoland area to help kick off Money Smart Week. We had a financial literacy summit happen a few weeks ago where we brought people from all over the world to come in and talk about access to financial literacy. So we've had a couple of different types of events to kick this off.
Well, that's great. I remember when Money Smart Week started, and it was just in Chicago, and we had a few dozen events in a couple of languages, and today it's nationwide, right?
It is. It's huge. So we have thousands of events happening all across the country. Like you said, it started here in Chicago in 2002 with 40 members that were really passionate about bringing financial education to the community, and from there, it's really spread across the country. So we have thousands of events happening in all 50 states and that are all free, open to the public. Anybody can attend.
I want Chicago to really appreciate how far-sighted the Fed was here in Chicago, mm-hmm. because after we kicked this off, I was at the Federal Reserve Bank in Atlanta for an event, and I was telling them how amazing this was and that they should do it, and they looked like I had three heads. I'm sorry. We print information for people, and that's pretty much how it used to be, but what you've done is taken it off the page, and you've brought it where people can go to sessions, and they can learn, they can ask questions, they can talk about their own personal financial matters. It seems like that's really a great way to be.
It is. And we make sure that we have something for everyone. So if you're interested in just learning basic budgeting, if you're interested in trying to save for college, if you're interested in planning for retirement, there are events that are available, free, open to you. And we have them in person. We also have them virtually, too. Webinars are picking up in popularity. We have virtual sessions. I think in Michigan this coming week they're going to be having a teleconference for seniors that want to plan for their retirement. So really we're trying to access consumers where they are within the time that they have to focus on this issue.
Well, I love that the technology is growing and changing. So let's talk a little bit about some of the different kinds of sessions that are available. How do you find them and where do you go?
Sure. So if you go to our website, moneysmartweek.org, we have a Find an Events page that has all of the events happening across the country and in Chicago. So you can look by zip code, you can look by topic or subject matter, and you can also look by audience. So we not only have information for...
You mean to see if you like anybody who's going to be there too?
Right.
Is this like a Facebook friend thing?
It is. So we have events that are focused for adults, obviously, but then we also have events for kids because we find that great education opportunities are available for children, but also we get the young people in learning about how to manage their money, and then we get their parents or their guardians in there as well, so we can do a little dual education and cross-generational education, which is great. So we have events, again, that focus on preparing for college. That's something that I'm very interested in. I have a 1.5-year-old, and so my husband and I are...
So you have 16 and a half years to go.
Exactly.
I have two kids in college.
Oh, gosh.
Thankfully, it's all set aside already.
Well, I did one of those online calculators, which scared me into some action. So we're looking at...
Those are good.
How we can plan.
Thankfully, the Department of Education has forced colleges to put that up.
Right, which is wonderful. And it also gives you a very concrete number to start working with. So we know we need to set aside X number of dollars per month. So I'm looking at going to events like How to Prepare for the Rising Cost of College that's being hosted at the Neighborhood Boys and Girls Club in my neighborhood. There's tons of other events, though. We have everything from Women and Money that's being hosted at the Budlawn Woods Public Library, focusing on that. We've got events that are helping people plan for retirement. We even have tours of the Chicago Board Options Exchange. If that's something that you're interested in, that's a Money Smart Week event available to you.
I have to say that's a pretty cool tour.
Right.
I've done that before.
Oh, nice. I'm going to be doing that tomorrow. Oh. First time there.
So if you want to follow Heather around, you can actually, now you know where she's going to be. So some of the things that people have asked me along the way are, well, what if I want to buy a house? If I want to buy a car, I want to learn how to finance things. What we would call today in the content world, customer journeys, mm-hmm. right? And I know there are a lot of banks that are partners with you or credit unions, financial services companies. They're also sponsoring. Some of these sessions do take place in their offices, don't they?
Yes, they do. So we have financial institutions, we have nonprofits, for-profits, government agencies, really anybody that you can think of that would be interested in this topic, we have as a partner that's hosting an event, which is wonderful because it really spreads the reach so much further than we could as the Fed.
And different languages.
Different languages. So we have events that are being hosted in English and Spanish. We have events that are being hosted only in Spanish. We have events in Mandarin. We have events in Polish. So really we're, again, trying to access the consumers where they are and provide them information in the context in which they can receive it.
Which is so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. So moneysmartweek.org. You can search always by zip code, by type, by event.
Right.
By
and
time.
By audience.
By audience, mm-hmm. whether it's for adults, or senior.
Kids.
You know, you can cross go, right? You know, if you're a kid, you can go to the senior session.
You can.
You can. You may not enjoy it, but you can go. And then you said it's also online for webinars as well.
It's online as well.
Heather Greenwell from the Fed, thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And thanks to the Fed for sponsoring Money Smart Week again, year 16.
It is, yes.
It's so exciting. Excited to see it. Okay, moneysmartweek.org.